Welcome back. Today we're looking at a powerful message from Brother Steve, part of his Sermon on the Mount series, Lesson 42.
That's right, focusing on Matthew 5, verses 10 to 12.
And the title itself, well, it grabs you. Happy are the persecuted. It feels like such a contradiction, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It cuts right against everything the world tells us about happiness and success.
So we want to spend some time reflecting on that.
Yes, our goal here is really to distill that core lesson. What's the actual cost of following Christ? Especially, you know, trying to stay strong spiritually in today's world.
Because the sermon opened with this this really direct challenge, it suggested that if your life is just smooth sailing, if everybody likes you,
you might be doing something wrong, or rather not doing something right.
Exactly. The point was, you simply can't live a truly righteous life, reflecting God's kingdom in an unrighteous society without, well, some pushback, some friction.
If you're fitting in too well everywhere, maybe you're hiding that light God gave you.
Yeah, hiding it under a bushel, as the saying goes.
And this isn't just an opinion. It's grounded right there in Matthew 5:10-12.
Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake,
for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. It's a promise, but also kind of a heads up.
A heads up, that's a good way to put it. And what struck me was how quickly this persecution started for Jesus himself. He'd barely laid out these kingdom principles, the Beatitudes.
And boom, hatred started brewing almost immediately.
From the people in power, no less.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mark chapter 3 tells us the Pharisees, right after seeing his work, immediately conspired with the Herodians, people they normally wouldn't associate with, just to figure out how to destroy him.
That's incredible. Crossing political enemy lines just to stop him.
That's how threatened they felt by his righteousness, by the kingdom he represented.
And Luke 6 mentions the scribes and Pharisees being filled with rage, just pure rage. Why? Because he healed someone on the Sabbath. They were looking for any excuse.
They hated him because his light exposed their darkness. It's that simple and that profound.
So when Jesus calls people to follow him, he doesn't sugarcoat it. He says, pick up your cross.
Right. And we need to remember what that meant back then. Mm-hmm. To a first century Jew, a cross wasn't just a symbol. It meant death. Painful public execution.
So he was saying from the get-go, this path involves sacrifice. It's not about earthly power or prestige. There's a real price.
A very real price. No illusions about crowns and glory right away.
And that honesty is crucial, isn't it? It sorts people out. The sermon mentioned modern figures like Charlie Kirk was brought up.
Yes, as an example of someone publicly declaring faith, knowing it could come at a significant cost, maybe even the ultimate one.
That kind of clear-eyed willingness, it feels like something we need more of, separating the truly committed from those just along for the ride.
That willingness, that deep loyalty to Christ, it inevitably disrupts your everyday life. The message really highlighted this.
First stop, your job, your vocation.
Because kingdom principles often run completely counter to how the world operates, especially in business.
That example of the stonemason was so vivid. Imagine him sitting there hearing Jesus preach by the sea.
Life-changing words.
Then he goes back to his job site and realizes, wait a minute, I'm building a pagan temple.
His conscience, now awakened by Christ, just won't let him do it. But then comes the panic.
How will I live? How will I feed my family?
It's the dilemma. Working for someone dishonest, ruthless, ungodly.
Mm-hmm.
Once your eyes are opened, it becomes almost unbearable. You're operating under a completely different set of rules.
Which leads straight to that story about Tertullian, the early church writer.
Oh, that's powerful. A man comes to him, struggling with a job that felt wrong after his conversion, and says, you know, desperately, but I must live.
And Tertullian's response, just two words.
Must you?
Chilling. It just cuts right to the heart of it.
It forces the question, what is your ultimate priority? According to the sermon, for a true believer, loyalty to Christ isn't an option. It's the only option.
So if your job conflicts with that loyalty, the choice is already made, isn't it?
In essence, yes. The decision flows from who your ultimate master is.
And it's not just work. That loyalty impacts your social life, too. Hugely.
Completely. Friendships, activities, where you spend your time, it all gets reevaluated.
The speaker shared his own story, didn't he, about leaving the club at the Air Force Base?
Yes, Cannon Air Force Base.
Yeah.
He used to be there every day at 3 p.m., ready for the club opening at 4. After getting saved, he just stopped going.
And his friends.
Initially curious, maybe a bit confused, but when they realized he was serious about this change, this faith, alienation set in. They wanted the old, him, the club guy, not the converted guy.
It's a modern echo of what early Christians faced constantly.
Absolutely. Could they go to the pagan festivals? Could they eat meat sacrificed to idols? I mean, that was often the cheapest meat available.
Right. Or attend the games or shows, often held in or near temples. Every social interaction became a potential point of compromise.
Their whole world tilted on its axis.
Which underscores why Christian fellowship is so incredibly important.
It's essential. Think about a first century Jew who came to Christ. They were often instantly cut off. Synagogue, family, livelihood, gone.
Jesus knew this. He said you have to be ready to be lonely in some crowds.
And the sermon added that we should maybe even, quote, relish being lonely in some crowds.
Because if the world pushes you out,
you need somewhere to belong. Mm. The church, the fellowship of believers, that becomes your crowd, your essential support system.
Which brings us to maybe the most challenging part of the reflection, comparing that early church reality to, well, to us today.
Yeah, the contrast is stark. The sermon didn't shy away from the historical brutality.
No, it didn't. Christians thrown to lions, burned alive as human torches for Nero's garden parties, sewn into animal skins for dogs to tear apart. It's horrifying to even think about.
And it wasn't random violence. It was often systematic. The Roman Empire had a tool for enforcing loyalty.
Caesar work.
Exactly. Once a year, you had to burn a pinch of incense, say the words, "Caesar is Lord," and you got your little certificate, your libelous.
Your proof of compliance, your ticket to participate in society and the economy.
But the Christians.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it. Mm. They couldn't say Caesar's is Lord because they knew only Jesus is Lord.
So, no certificate. They essentially became outlaws, spiritually speaking, forced to worship illegally, live on the margins. Not because they were political rebels, but because of that one refusal.
They faced death rather than compromise on those few words.
And then we look at ourselves. Mm. We get uncomfortable, maybe just saying something small about Jesus in public. We worry about ruffling feathers.
The sermon put it bluntly. Maybe the reason Christianity is so tolerable today is because our standards have dropped so low.
Oof, that lands hard.
God's standards haven't changed, though. Mm-hmm. He still requires that absolute loyalty, that purity. Have we become too easy to live with? Too comfortable with the world?
And that comfort might be ending? The message warned that things are shifting?
We're seeing it, aren't we? Churches losing banking services. Lawsuits over the right to worship, the right to live by biblical conviction. The pressure seems to be building again.
It really does. Which makes that final challenge right before talking about the Lord's Supper so vital.
Yeah, the call for self-examination. If you've never felt any kind of persecution, any pushback at all for your faith,
you need to take a hard look in the spiritual mirror. Make sure you're genuinely saved. That your faith is real and active, not just passive.
It's an essential checkup, isn't it? Especially before coming to the Lord's table.
Absolutely. Purity of heart is paramount. Paul's warning to the Corinthians is serious. Some were sick, some had even died, because they partook unworthily, without discerning the body, without that purity.
We can't approach the king casually. Our loyalty must be undivided. Christ is everything. He's the ultimate community, the only Lord we need.
Like that image Brother Steve shared of his own family serving the elements, his son-in-law, once lost, now serving alongside his grandson.
That generational faithfulness, that dedication, that's the goal. Making sure we aren't bowing our knee to the world system, but living fully for him.
So as we wrap this up, let's go back to the original Greek of Matthew 5.12. That phrase, blessed are you.
The structure implies something deeper than just experiencing persecution.
It suggests, blessed are you when you have a willingness in your life to be persecuted. It's about the posture of your heart.
Are you willing? Is the potential cost accepted?
That's the question left for all of us, isn't it? Do you possess that willingness? Is discipleship just a word, or have you counted and accepted the cost? Because the moment we become unwilling to pay the price,
we start compromising the very kingdom we claim as our own.